Good morning. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. We're still looking for those cheese steaks, by the way.
We still are. It's hard to find them this far west, but we'll give it a shot.
That's right. We're working on it. And speaking of working on it, we've got somebody here, one of our favorite interviewees, and we're about ready to grill him. Barnaby Wayne fans.
Wow, you that hungry, huh?
I am. I'm telling you. I like my Barnaby medium well, thank you.
There you go.
Well, when you like me very well, let me know. I mean, you guys told me there was going to be bacon, so.
Well, we lied.
Yeah, well, we had but I'm still glad here. To see you.
We had to get you here somehow.
We have sausage, though.
Okay, I think we can work something out.
All right, Barnaby, you are involved in so many things, and we were talking right before we came in. Of course, people don't know that. But you were talking about this revolution in home building that's happening because high-end machinery and computing power is becoming so cheap.
I mean, fundamentally what's happening is that, you know, the digital revolution is coming to home building. In the last probably 5 years, high-end CAD systems have gotten cheap enough and personal computers have gotten powerful enough that there are people, you know, on their laptops running high-end solid modeling 3D CAD systems. And at the same time, people are starting to have access to numerically controlled machinery so that you can actually design something on your computer, send it to the machine, have the machine cut the parts, and we're getting to the point now where you can actually make parts that are ready for assembly. I mean, I know some people at One Chapter who have actually built their own three-axis numerically controlled metal cutting machinery, and they're building truss structures where they actually design the truss on the computer, go to the machine, kit it out digitally, complete with the Clico holes in it. And
oh,
so,
wow.
You know, they cut the gusset plates and the tubes, and it comes off the machine ready to be Clicoed up. And they Clico up so true that, I mean, if you design the truss properly so it's self-triangulating, it's self-jigging. I mean, there's one truss these guys are building where they assembled it on the hangar floor, and it was rocking a little bit, and they went, uh-oh, it's twisted. And then they got out the levels, and they discovered that what was twisted was the hangar floor, not the parts.
Yeah, that's so, I believe that.
So they
that
put it amazing. On a couple of sawhorses, leveled the sawhorses up, and started riveting.
Wow.
And, you know, hopefully next year I'll be able to tell you a lot more about that project. I can't tell you in detail what it is now.
Oh, he okay. could tell us, but he'd have to kill us.
Right,
no,
right,
I could. Yeah. You know, but, you know, besides which, it's so much fun watching you guys go, why won't he tell me?
Yeah, right, yes. Right.
You know, I got to give you a tease for next year.
Well, but that's good. We'll invite you back next year.
Oh, yeah, I know you always do.
A better fly-in next year, though.
But, you know, if you take a look at between, you know, 3D printing's coming along, NC machinery's coming along, what's cool about it is not only do you get to build parts faster, which of course helps, it lets you take, and once again, we've seen this in several of the revolutions in home building, it lets you go back to old ideas that worked really well but were too time consuming in labor and bring them back. So for example, a lot of the reasons we went to composites, you know, the whole rutan moldless composite revolution was because it was quicker to build because you didn't need as much tooling. And now you say, okay, but now what if I can laser cut my metal parts? What if I don't have to bandsaw and file and trim and drill and deburr? What if I can take it off the machine ready for the Clicos? You know, now maybe we go back to that older approach.
So it's almost like plans building. We'll see a resurgence.
Yeah, in a sense, except that now the plans are on a thumb drive.
Well, that's interesting.
I mean, you know, I could see a situation where instead of selling someone a roll of blueprints that still smell like ammonia from the blueprinting machine and mm-hmm. turn yellow if you leave them out in the sun and all of that, you sell someone a digital download
and then,
of the NC files.
Oh, wow.
And then you just punch it into your machine and boom.
And then they can either go out to a job shop or if they have the machinery, you know, plug it in and make the parts, and that way, you know, the plans, the manufacturer, if you want to call it that, the designer, isn't shipping, you know, 700 pounds of metal parts. They're, you know.
Yeah, digital download thumb drive, a PDF for the construction manual.
That's right, and then you source the materials locally.
And you have them made locally unless you make them yourself.
Yeah, and you
and
know,
then
on
you
a
press
lot of
the button
things,
that says, I want 10 copies, and you build 10 airplanes.
Well, you know, a lot of these things are compatible with job shops.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a prototype ultralight I'm testing out in California right now. which is an amusingly useless airplane, as all ultralights are. You know, the joke I make with this airplane, because it's a very low wing loading airplane, so it cruises at about 30, and VNE is about 45 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in California, we have what we call the Santa Ana winds that come out of the desert and blow offshore, is that you don't take off on a Santa Ana with this airplane unless you're going to Catalina, because and you only get one shot at the landing.
Right, right. You know, you won't make it back.
But one of the things we did on that airplane, and this was, about 10 years ago now, is it's a lot of square tube rather than round tube in a lot of areas, and it's all put together with flat gussets, and we actually built all the gussets on the computer and had them water jetted. You know, so it was an early exercise in this idea of making the parts digitally. And, you know, even with water jet, which wasn't at that time as good as some of the laser cutting is now, we were to the point where when we got the gussets, they had the Clico holes in them. They were near net. I mean, we'd clean up the edges on a Scotch-Brite wheel on the grinder, and it was ready to go.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And, my partner on that, and I looked at that at the time, you know, because you had paid the setup fee and you paid for making. The first thing is, it was dirt cheap to make two or three ship sets. You know, it was like an extra $10 to make the last two ship sets.
Right.
When we provided the material. So you had lots of spare. So when you buggered one up, you had something to repair it. But the other thing is, we made a rough estimate of if we had done bandsaw and file, started from the templates that we had on the computer and done it the classical bandsaw and file way as compared to what we paid the water jetter, and we figured we would have been paying ourselves about $250 an hour.
Wow.
You know, because, you know, when you took all the costs and we got this bag of gussets.
So different skill set required, though. You got to have someone who knows CAD, or learns CAD.
Yeah, but.
And understands it.
But once again, it's the same thing as having the designer who knows how to draft a set of plans. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, drawing a good set of plans on a drawing board is an art.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's a different skill set. But it's also, in a sense, if you look at generations, it's a skill set that may be more suitable to the younger people, the people who are coming along. You have the whole maker movement in the country
right
now. We have kids who are growing up in the 3D digital world. So to them, you know, building stuff on 3D CAD is you know, like playing with crayons was
like
for me.
Like Lego,
you know,
yeah.
Or Lego or whatever. I mean, they do Lego too. But, you know, so it works very nicely with the skill set of the people who are coming along now. And with the world that they are living in.
Wow.
So, and for people who want to be doing more, you know, newer, more advanced designs or experimenting, the fact that you can cut that fab time down, you know, opens up the possibilities for a lot of interesting things.
Well, plus, I guess you can get all sorts of stress analysis software and
that's
some wind tunnel stuff for level.
That's not the day. I mean, 3D, you know, stress analysis, finite element analysis has been around for a long time.
Right.
Takes a little more learning to be able to do it in a way. You know, the problem sometimes with turning an unknowledgeable person loose with too powerful a software, it's like, you know, giving a 6-year-old a chainsaw and saying we need firewood.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
You may get some firewood, but it can be messy.
will be messy.
So, you know, the computational fluid dynamics, which some people call digital wind tunnels, which is a term I hate, because the computational fluid mechanics programs aren't good enough yet, at least the bottom end ones, to reliably predict some of the critical parts of the flight envelope. So they're useful tools, but only when used by someone who's experienced enough to know when they're not useful.
Right, to know when he's getting garbage results.
Yeah, because what these codes will do, and this isn't to knock on the codes, this is just a natural fact of the mathematics of it, is they will quite merrily continue to give a plausible-looking answer when they've fallen off their range of validity. So, for example, they don't predict stall characteristics very well. You can get some pretty good numbers about what the characteristics of the airplane will be in level flight or, you know, a normal up-and-away flight with attached flow. But they won't predict something like a tendency to drop a wing at the stall or you know, things like that. So,
that end of the design and environment has a way to go yet.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, in some respects, that has a way to go even in the industry. I mean, there are still, as much as even the very high-end CFD has gotten very good, there are still some areas where there's no substitute for getting in a real wind tunnel, not a digital one, or a flight test, or, you know, in the home-built world, flying a big-scale model.
Okay. Well, things are definitely changing and fast.
Yeah,
which is cool because
you know, I mean, if you think about it, anything that makes it better and easier for people to put new airplane types in the air and also tap into the technology that's being developed everywhere else.
Right.
That's the other. That's the other thing that's cool about it is there's starting to be an awful lot of stuff. You know, I mean, I saw out on the line there. I saw a guy who had an autopilot in his home built. It's a wooden home built, wow. High wing wooden home built. Looks kind of cub like, right? It's got little separate extra ailerons and a second little tipped vertical tail made out of model airplane stuff. I mean, it's covered with monocoque.
Wow.
And he had taken, you know, essentially the whole autopilot system from, you know, a commercial, what we people call drone, essentially a quadcopter.
Right.
And hacked it to run his separate surface autopilot in his airplane.
Oh, geez.
Wow. I wonder That's how amazing. Well that worked.
Interesting.
Well, actually, what this gentleman did was really clever because what he did was he had separate surfaces, you know, little mini ailerons near the tip and a little mini rudder. And all of them are small enough that the pilot can overpower it with the regular controls. Right. And so there's no servos hooking into the main controls.
That's the secret.
So,
right there.
So you know, I mean, but what struck me is that he had taken a bunch of interesting technology that had been developed for completely other purposes that's out there and said, I can use that on my airplane, and figured out how to
make it work.
How to hack it and make it all work.
Wow.
And so, you know, there's lots of interesting possibilities coming along.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to cut you off because we could go for another 4 hours.
Oh,
but
yeah, definitely.
We got to unfortunately do that. Thank you for joining us again, sir.
My pleasure. It's always great to see you guys. It's always great to be back here in Oshkosh.
And I want to hang out in your garage.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you know, I think we can cram you in between the various projects, but there's not much room in there at this point.
All right.
We'll be happy.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Barnaby. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and you're listening to EAA Radio.